Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to Topic TBD, where each week we take a topic of interest to the payments and commerce community and dig into it with an expert on that particular topic. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Ashley Ritteri, who is the Chief Information Officer at AirHelp. Ashley, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, Karen.
So our topic is airline travel. Happy, happy. A lot of people are doing that because it's summer. But also the compensation related to those inevitable delays that happen in the course of travel. And in particular in the summer, there's a lot of things that airlines can't control, like weather. So the incidences of those things really do tend to accelerate. But let's put a little number to the travel perspective. So those who keep track of this stuff, the U.S. Bureau of Transportation says that 234 million people will take to the skies traveling via U.S. airlines to see the sights here in the U.S. of A. Lots of people here in Boston where I live. And as I said, you know, many of them are excited about their travel, but run into the inevitable delay. The U.S. Bureau of Transportation statistics says that in the summer months, on average, 25% of people will experience a delay. Now, that's not necessarily an egregious delay, but they'll be inconvenienced to some degree. And so I guess, Ashley, the question for you as we start, there's an airline passenger bill of rights that establishes compensation for delays that go beyond a certain time frame that I think we all agree is unacceptable. How many consumers are really aware of what that is and therefore what they're eligible to receive in compensation if they experience such a problem?
Well, when it comes to passengers' awareness of their rights, I would say that it is vanishingly small. We, along with other companies in the industry, we do our best to make sure that passengers are aware of those rights. But I think you only really get any increase in awareness when there is a terrible mistake, like the United flight with the overbooked passenger and the video. And unfortunately, in the United States, your rights are fairly limited. So while there are notices posted at every airport and there's tiny print on your ticket about your rights, there's only three fundamental passenger rights that you have. And one is the tarmac delay rule that was implemented, going on 5 years ago now, which says that airlines can't keep you on the tarmac more than 3 hours. Otherwise, they face a $27,000 fine per passenger. The other is related to overbooking. If you are involuntarily bumped, you're entitled to up to $1,500 cash. And the third is the right to information about the fares, right? So they can't change the ticket price when you are buying a ticket and bury tiny fees and have them show up later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Ashley, let's talk about the tarmac delay. And I think we all know that the airlines do pad their schedule to anticipate the inevitable delay, I mean, especially given the unpredictability of weather and so forth. But 3 hours on top of a padded schedule means that you can endure a pretty significant delay before you're entitled to anything. Is that right?
Yes. Well, the sad part about the tarmac delay is that you're actually not entitled to any compensation when it happens. The fines are levied on the airline and paid to the Department of Transportation. So the passenger generally would receive some goodwill from an airline in the form of vouchers or some mileage credit, but all cash compensation is only available if you're applying for rights under what's called the Montreal Convention and or the European law that covers passengers traveling to and from European Union states.
So let's talk about these goodwill payments then, because it sounds like there's an opportunity, given the delays that happen in summer and certainly throughout the travel season. Are airlines thinking about ways to provide goodwill compensation instantly to consumers when they're experiencing a delay. So a flight's been delayed by an hour or 90 minutes, so you're not sitting on the plane, but you're sitting in the terminal because of something. Crew didn't show up.
Certainly. If you're a mileage member, especially a premium mileage member, you're probably already used to getting notification. I was on a flight with United a few years ago, and I fell asleep the minute I boarded the flight and then woke up when I landed. And what woke me up was a text message from United saying, sorry about your delay. Please choose between a 5,000-mile credit or a $500 voucher. And I didn't even know I'd been delayed, but that's because I was a United Silver member at the time.
Right.
I think they are experimenting with more instant notifications, but you have to remember that every aircraft is composed of what are considered high-value customers, people who fly all the time and spend money loyally with a single airline. Then you've got the potentially high-value customers who seem to fly a lot but may not always be flying with that airline. And then you've got the cattle class, the people who just fill the seats. And there's not a lot of incentive for an airline to do much to provide joy for those passengers because in most cases, the only reason those passengers chose this flight was based on the fare price alone. And they'll never see that passenger again unless they have the cheapest flight.
So how are airlines then keeping the balance between, because you never know if that particular consumer who has a good experience with that airline won't tell friends and won't rearrange schedules to fly them again. I mean, aren't
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, Karen. I mean, what you've hit upon is that there's a kind of hubris in the industry that goes back 20 years where they think they know their passengers. But with modern technology, machine learning, and performance marketing, they should be much better at knowing the lifetime value of any individual passenger. But they still fundamentally use loyalty membership as the primary metric. So that's a mistake on their part. And with the breakage rates associated with vouchers and all of the restrictions, delivering vouchers to passengers when things go wrong actually doesn't really produce much customer joy. It would cost them very little to offer some form of cash compensation, whether it was a $50 PayPal payment to your account or some way of using NFC through the various phone payment systems, or even just a link to a website where a passenger can go and collect their $50 and use it on their trip. That sort of compensation would produce a much higher level of joy with the passengers, and we know that for a fact because that's the business we're in. We help passengers get money from airlines, and when it's actual cash, they've long since forgotten the disruption and are delighted to be receiving compensation.
So I know your business is helping the passenger collect, and we're going to talk about the annoying process of that whole voucher compensation situation in a minute. But are you also at the same time advising the airlines on doing the things that you just described, and how are they taking that advice?
Well, you know, the airline industry is not a monolith. You have cutting-edge airlines who are constantly experimenting with new technologies, and then you have those that seem to be stuck in a time period that's 40 years ago or more, both in terms of technology and in culture. But we are working closely with several airlines to establish what we consider a premium customer service level, enabling passengers to be notified of both their rights and also opportunities for goodwill compensation. And there are many airlines in Europe, South America, Latin America, and a few aggressive innovators in the United States that are interested in that.
And how are they looking to implement those kinds of payments? Since payments is a big part of your business, how are they looking to do that?
Well, I'd love to tell you that it was some kind of blockchain solution, but it's nothing nearly so advanced. At the moment, those types of technologies tend to be very traditional. A website where you can go with a code, register your booking reference number from your flight. At most, the most advanced technology might be to scan your boarding pass as proof that you were on a specific flight. and then they will schedule some kind of electronic payment to you in your bank account or even send you a check.
Wow, sending
so
a check.
It's nowhere near real time, which is, I think, one of the things that they're missing. If they could move towards real time compensation for passengers, the immediate impact, it would go a long way towards reducing consumer stress. We offered a product years ago, which is still in private beta because we're figuring out which parts of it work, where we provided to passengers instant payment. So if you happen to have a 2-hour delay, you would open the app and notify us that you were having that delay, and then we'd transfer $100 directly to your bank account. And
wow,
you'd be surprised at what $100 instant payment does for passenger stress level when they're sitting at the airport, waiting to find out whether or not they're ever going to fly.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. But, that costs the airlines money. So are they looking at it as an investment in a relationship, or are they looking at it as a cost of doing business that is not necessarily something that, if breakage is a big part of their model, isn't helping that part of the business?
Well, in all honesty, the biggest cost associated with disruption has nothing to do with passengers. It's really not about compensation or vouchers. It's all of their infrastructure fixed costs. So reaccommodating passengers on a new aircraft or a later flight when the seats are already sold out, all of those things add up to 1,000 times more than the cost of compensating the passenger. The airlines could give every passenger on every flight that was significantly delayed or canceled $100 or more, and it would really have no impact on their bottom line. The biggest cost to them is moving the aircraft around, overtime for their crews, flying crews from one place to the other, and the airport fees that they have to pay for having their aircraft parked.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Talk to me a little bit about vouchers. You mentioned early on that vouchers is still the primary way of compensation, but they take so long to, first of all, you lose them, you lose track of them, they take forever to get. Isn't that just kind of a worthless, it's a gesture that I guess some track, but do most people value that as compensation?
Well, it depends on the airline, of course. And I would say that almost every consumer sees a voucher as a form of an apology. So the breakage rate, which we define as the percentage of people who do not ever claim a voucher, is enormously high, well over 80%. So less than 1 in 5 vouchers ever get redeemed. And part of that is that a lot of the airlines in the industry apply blackout rules and restrictions on how you can redeem the voucher. And that has progressively over time become more and more true. So even if you're one of these airlines that doesn't impose those blackouts and restrictions, the general feeling of the value of vouchers has plummeted in the last decade. So that's why we recommend to airlines that they switch away from vouchers and move towards actual cash compensation. In the insurance industry and other industries, the profit incentive to rely upon breakage, that's a strategic decision. But there is a different strategic decision that modern consumers expect, which is fantastic customer service. And if you move towards fantastic customer service, positive user experiences, and joy, then you'll get repeat transactions from those customers. So in my opinion, it's foolish to rely upon a small print financial trick, which is that I've offered you something that's worth nothing, and move towards offering you something that you appreciate. You talk to your friends. These financial incentives were set up long before there was even anything remotely like social media, long before the internet existed. And it's a different kind of economy today. So one happy passenger can bring you hundreds of other future passengers.
Yep. Is there a difference between the way a business traveler thinks about compensation for delays and the vacation leisure traveler thinks about the same situation? I mean, do business travelers just cope with this and, go to the hotel lobby bar or airport bar and charge it to the company and don't necessarily worry about it?
I think the biggest difference is that the business traveler is generally not traveling on their own dime.
Right.
So in addition to the stress associated with not getting to go on your vacation when you wanted to, you have this terrible nagging voice inside your head that says, I paid for this with my hard-won money.
Right.
And the business traveler doesn't have that. Now, they may have a more stressful situation, which is that I've got to make it to a meeting, otherwise I'll lose this deal.
Right.
But in most of those circumstances, they're under a managed travel plan, so they have some kind of travel coordinator that if the meeting is that critical, they can rebook them on a different flight and eat the cost or come back and recoup the cost later under the Montreal Convention. Very few passengers know this, but if your airline causes you a delay in which you incur actual expenses, you're entitled to a refund on those expenses up to $1,500. The key is saving your receipts. So if you have a delay or baggage doesn't arrive, most passengers are familiar with that one because the airlines push that policy when you go and say, hey, my bag never came. And they'll tell you, go out, you can buy some new clothes, you know, spend some amount, and then we'll reimburse you. But if you buy an alternate ticket to get where you need to go, all you need is to save the receipts and send those in with your claim, and you can be reimbursed up to $1,500.
You know, it's funny. I went on a European vacation several years ago, and I landed in Rome, and my two suitcases did not ever leave the United States, and so therefore did not land with me. And it was a really interesting experience trying to, first of all, identify where my bag was, and that took, you know, the better part of a half a day. And because it was, you know, Rome and we'll get back to you, I mean, I eventually did get my luggage. It was 2 days later. But it was, no, and I went out, I had to buy new clothes, not necessarily a hardship. That was kind of fun. But mm-hmm. but no one offered anything. You know, they didn't say, oh, we're so sorry, or, oh, you know, here's some money to go buy stuff. I mean, I was headed to a nice hotel, a nice part of Rome, but but yeah, at some point you just say, the hassle factor is so great. I just want to get out of the airport, and I will work with, you know, in this case, American Express, and they'll figure it out for me.
There's so many ways to get reimbursed in those circumstances. I actually have your story beat. I went to Copenhagen a few years ago, and it was a week-long trip. And my bag hadn't left Chicago. And then when I got back to Seattle a week later, my bag went from Chicago to Copenhagen. And then I spent a week trying to get the bag back from Copenhagen to Seattle. But because I knew my rights, I went out immediately, spent $1,500 to the penny worth of new items that I needed, and filed the claim and was fully reimbursed.
Wow.
You know, and your credit card often will cover you. There's lots of ways to be covered. But I do want to make one really important point here, because we're painting a pretty bleak picture of travel, and I don't want to do that, because I think it's one of the most life-changing, positive, affirming things anyone can do. The vast majority of passengers never experience any kind of disruption at all. And that that 25% figure you got from the DOT, look, that's just basic on-time rate. And if your flight's delayed 15 minutes, that's the point at which it's no longer considered on time. And most passengers neither notice nor care about a 20-minute delay. It's 30 minutes that might cause you to miss a connection, or an hour that can cause you to, you know, miss your plans or miss a wedding. You know, and those are the inconveniences that really affect the individual. But again, that's, you know, maximum 3.5% of all passengers traveling. Now, summertime is worse, because it is almost always the airline's fault in the summertime. The air traffic network and the hub and spoke system, it is bulging at capacity, and they can barely put more planes in the air to cover the increased volume of traffic during the summer. In the wintertime, there's a lot less traffic, but there's a lot more weather, and there isn't much that they can do about traveling in the wintertime and the disruption.
Yep. Living in Boston with all the snow, we know this. We know this very well. So you guys have been at this for several years, since 2013. What about the compensation process has changed? And what we've talked about a lot of the things that need to change. But has there been any incremental improvement in the 4 years you've been doing this?
Oh, absolutely. It's night and day. And I'll tell you, we often get asked, why should passengers use your service instead of filing direct? Because, you know, the compensation that you're entitled to, that's the law. And the airlines are required to follow the law. They have exceptions, so you can file your own claim. But what we discovered was that enforcing the law requires lawyers. So we set up offices in over 14 different legal jurisdictions. So if you're flying from Dallas to Belgium and you have a delay there and then you go home, in order to sue the airline when they say no to your claim, you've got to go back to Belgium and actually submit a court case there, because the amounts are so small that you're filing in what is the European equivalent of a small claims court. And if you've ever dealt with small claims court, you have to be there in person. There's no electronic filing. You can't have a surrogate go. You can't even bring an attorney in most cases. But in Europe, we can send attorneys, and they show up with the documentation. And after 2 years of being sued by us and losing every time, what airlines have started to do is when we file that motion for a case, they call us up and say, hey, let's settle this case, because it's a lot less expensive for them to just help the passenger than to pay their own lawyers to show up in court and lose.
Wow. So how do people find you? How do disgruntled passengers find you?
Well, we do our best to make sure that air passenger rights are talked about in the media as much as possible. We do a tremendous amount of advertising on Facebook and Google. And we also have our primary revenue strategy, which is our partnerships with online travel agencies. So if you book your ticket through an online travel agency, and I won't name them all, there's far too many, but what will happen is if you experience the flight in which you're entitled to compensation, we see that booking, and as soon as the flight has experienced the delay or the cancellation, you'll get an email from your online travel agency telling you about your rights, and in there would be a link that brings you to our app site, and you can file for compensation in under 3 minutes. So unfortunately, you know, for those passengers, it's only about 35% of passengers globally who are booking on those online travel agencies. So the real challenge is how to get the awareness out to all the passengers who book directly on the airline websites. And for us, this is a market-building circumstance, so we want everyone their rights, and it doesn't necessarily need to be that they file their claim with AirHelp. There are other companies that do it as well. They don't do it as well, but they do it also.
What's key
is that passengers are made aware of their rights. And we think that the more passengers that demand satisfaction, the better the airlines will be. There is infrastructure spending. There's something called wet leasing, which is where an airline contracts with another company in advance to have sort of emergency personnel and aircraft available. Boston's a good example. There's a carrier who I won't name and shame today, but they have had a lot of trouble traveling from a island destination back and forth to Boston. And when they have a broken aircraft, it's taken them 2 or 3 days to get the extra aircraft over to Boston to carry those passengers. And that's just not necessary, that amount of delay. There are dozens of companies in the United States that have Airbus 310s that can carry 220 passengers from Boston to anywhere in Europe or anywhere in the Atlantic Islands. But, you know, they need to plan and pay in advance for those contracts.
And you don't need to name the name, but I think I know who that is. That particular.
It was a highly publicized event in Boston a month ago.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so one comment on payments. I mean, that is your business. I mean, clearly you're helping passengers get money. So payments has to be a core competency. Give us the inside peek at how you do that, how you're set up to do that.
Well, I'll tell you the most surprising thing I learned when I started working with AirHelp. I was an advisor in the beginning, and I didn't start full-time until 2015 after they'd been in business for 18 months. And we had so many passengers who we'd won the claim for, we'd notified that we had their money waiting for them, and they would not come and get their money. And we discovered that part of the reason was that at the time we were using a payment service that required an additional account setup. And so, you know, our passengers had already created a bus, and when it came time to receive their money, they didn't want to create an extra account, and they were concerned about security of their banking information. So after we switched away from a user experience which required you to create a new third-party account and started working with payment systems that allow us to directly collect and secure the banking information from the customer and make those transfers on the same day, we reduced that drop-off on payment receipts down to almost nothing.
Wow.
And now with currency exchange rates enabled in a way that we can pay passengers in the same currency where they live, it's almost universally true that passengers prefer to be paid in their domestic currency. So whether that's the Polish zloty or the Swiss franc or the Danish kroner, you know, we receive money always from an airline in the airline's currency. So if we win a 600 euro claim against SAS, they'll pay us in a Swedish kroner or Danish kroner and leave it up to us to convert it to euros. And rather than incurring those exchange rates, what we try to do is pay out to the passengers who live in Sweden and Denmark in their local currencies.
Got it. So my final question, Ashley, is do the airlines know your name and therefore are they always on time when you fly?
I will tell you that it's the exact opposite. Every single employee who ever joins AirHelp suddenly begins to experience flight cancellations and disruptions.
Oh, no.
We would call it a curse, but the thing is that those cancellations and three-hour delays are worth 600 euros. So AirHelp employees are delighted to experience delays.
It's funny because I was going to say that I'd start traveling on the routes that you travel if that were the case, but it sounds like I should stay away.
Well, it depends on whether you prefer your time or the 600 euros because it goes a long way.
Well, it depends on the day. Well, Ashley, this was a fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed learning about the process and how you help consumers, but more importantly than that, I think the impact of getting reimbursement to consumers when they've been inconvenienced through a travel delay.